warriors come out to play. Warriors come out to play. Warriors come out to play.
Well, hello everyone, and welcome once again to the All Japan Excite series. Are you excited, Stephen?
As excited as I can be.
Excellent. Well, yes, as excited as you can be, you know, if you can muster enough energy from eating lettuce all day or whatever.
Yeah, and it's absolutely freezing cold and covered in snow, so, you know, great times to be in all-time cold weather, so.
Don't you need your essential fats living in Canada? Like, you know, your... Like,
yeah, we all eat seal.
How do you get by? I mean, you must
a winter cold. Fucking coat and a toque and mitts.
Okay. have you recovered, by the way, Stephen, from the epic roundtable 19-hour discussion that you had?
I am. I had to take one of them off. It was so epic. It was too epic for me. But I think I'm rejuvenated a little bit. I got Tim to host one of my shows. I've cut down my shows to only 3 a month. So I think I'm in a better state. Plus, I don't have to watch Triple H and Shawn Michaels matches anymore.
You're cutting down your shows to 3 a month. I hear a mild pop somewhere out there. Okay, well, shall we get into the footage tonight?
Yeah.
We're right in the middle of 1992, and the first match that we're going to look at, and I'll tell you, Stephen, this is the first show where the PowerPoints are coming from an iPad. Look at that. I'm going into the 21st century. I'm using the notepad feature today.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
So the pen and paper is put away?
If the batteries go, though, you can blame the iPad. I've only got 19%. That'll see me through an hour, won't it? this is Misawa and Kobashi taking on Jumbo and Akira Taue. And the date of the match is June the 5th, 1992. And I don't know if we watched exactly the same, because I don't think you sent... When you sent me the videos through, I'd already watched that match. And I think I'd watched another one. And when it started... it said I had this like bit of like Japanese TV, and it was Watchman.
Oh,
and I got a little.
Was that the guy selling the watch outside, or is that a different match?
No. It was actually like a Japanese TV show, Watchman, and then like the credits came up, and then the wrestling show started. That was exactly what I thought would be on Japanese TV in 1992. Like, if I had to, like, give a stereotype of what Japanese TV is, Watchman, you know, that is my...
Oh, I'll tell you this, in, I think it was, like, 2000 or 1999, maybe even, I got a tape which it had All Japan TV and New Japan TV and it alternate, but whoever taped it left the commercials in, and that was the greatest tape I have ever had in my entire life. It was just so awesome. Every commercial was, like, pure gold.
Were they... You know, like, because I basically my image of Japanese TV is that it's basically mental.
It's insane. It was absolutely insane. Yeah, I can't recall any of the commercials, but there, I think each commercial break there was a point when you went, "What the fuck? This is okay, awesome. It was so great."
Yeah, and for any non-British listeners, which is basically I'd say 90% of our entire listenership. If you fancy wasting an entire day of your life, look up the UK TV show Banzai that went out in the early 2000s. It was kind of like this weird spoof TV show which had these two Japanese guys. And it was like Banzai. And they do like weird bets. Like I remember one of them, like for example, they had these two old women who were in those like electric wheelchairs and they had a wheelchair race. No, in fact they didn't. They crashed into each other. They like put two old women in the wheelchairs and they were going to go hurtling towards each other. And then you had to bet on which old woman would give way first, who would try to swerve first type thing. But it was like, it was all sorts of crazy random things. And the whole idea of the show is that you had to bet. But it's presented in a very kind of, I guess, faux Japanese style. So I haven't sold it very well. But anyone listening, check it out. Banzai. So anyway, let's get into... That was completely random, Stephen. But
I was going to promote a Canadian show to go with it, but there's nothing. I don't remember any show like that.
It has to be a Canadian show, which basically
there was,
makes fun of Japanese people.
Oh, okay. There was one with bets. It was called Kenny vs. Spencer or something like that. And it was like each episode they would have like a bet against each other and they would try to pull it out. And it would usually the punishment would be very embarrassing. But that's the best I can do.
On Banzai, their famous thing was they had this guy called Mr. Shake Hand Man. That was my Japanese accent, by the way. He was called Mr. Shake Hands Man. Okay. And he'd go around, to red carpets, and he'd just shake the hands of famous people. And you had to bet how... Because he'd just keep on shaking their hand until they until they broke. And you had to bet on how long before the person like broke his firm handshake, as it were. That was quite fun. Anyway, so let's get into the Parv's Point, shall we?
Let's do it. It's been a while.
Where's Kawada tonight, by the way?
He's in that six man.
Yeah, I'm just wondering, is he... Because Misawa's started tagging with Kobashi now for some reason. Any ideas as to what...
I think Kawada is in his point between tagging with Misawa and tagging with Tawei. So I think next show, I think he starts teaming with Tawei.
Okay. Well, we'll save the why did he turn point until then, I guess.
Palms pit.
So, Parv's Point 1. I enjoyed Jumbo trying to smash Kobashi's knee with his shin breaker. And I thought that shin breaker that he had was basically when this match seemed to start in earnest for me. They really focused the offense on that leg pretty well. And there was a point, Stephen, where he did one of his death body slams, where it looked like Kobashi might break right through the canvas. He threw him down so hard. So I thought that you would have enjoyed that.
Yeah.
I also felt that Tawei looked really good working over the leg.
Top here. This is the best Tawei's look, don't you think?
Oh, yeah. I mean, we'll talk much more about Tawei later on.
Oh,
I
okay.
Think. But yes, this felt like a coming out party in general today for him. He did a really cool thing at one point, a shin breaker. And then he didn't break it and went straight into a back suplex. That was cool.
Yeah.
That was cool as fuck. That was really good. That was kind of like, I don't know, Bob Eaton level innovative, I thought, from Tawei. So, that was my first point.
Yeah, and it's really nice to see the crowd so hot for Misawa versus Jumbo, because this is the last... Like, we've seen a lot of Misawa, Kobashi, Misawa, Kawada versus Jumbo, Tawei matches.
Yeah.
And this is kind of the last one. So it was nice to see the crowd really hot for that.
Yeah, now I will say I have a little my second past point. I felt that when Misawa took over on offense and worked Tawei, that the match became much less engaging, and that Misawa has basically been best working underneath thus far from what we've seen of him. So I didn't think that his stuff on top was very engaging. But thankfully, it didn't go on too long because Jumbo came in and took off his head. So
with the death lariat,
I believe. Yeah, with a huge lariat. So.
But I think Misawa first, he develops a lot of great offense and looks really good on top. But I think his real skill is from working from underneath and selling and
No, I can see that, and I've got more to say about Misawa later. But I really felt that his offense was just flat here. Against Tawei, which is, it was like the match was going really well with that whole face and peril sequence on Kobashi, and I just felt it kind of died a bit during that moment. My third point is that Masawa's interactions with Jumbo were better. And they were really helped by the crowd being so hot, which you mentioned. And I actually thought that Kobashi was a lot better on offense here. He had really stiff chops. He had a DDT from the top. Sick. Bulldog from the top. Ted DiBiase scoop power slam. Missile drop kick. Moonsault. I mean, he looked really good on offense here, Kobashi. I mean, if I had been watching in 1992, I would have thought, Christ, that guy's a good wrestler. Wouldn't you have thought that?
Yeah, Kobashi's friggin' awesome, and
I bet Meltzer loved him for all of that kind of high-end offense, you know.
Yeah, and it just gets more and more. So I'm glad you're not as anti-Kobashi this week.
I mean, it was almost like night and day. He's all of a sudden like, wow, this guy can go. And the fourth point. Can you hear banging in the background, Steven?
Yeah, it seems like you have something in a giant like bucket and you're shaking it around.
Somebody is letting off fireworks, and it's the February 27th, so I don't know what the hell they're doing.
That's not a holiday, is it?
It's just a random it's a random Friday night. You know, anyway, fireworks. Fourth part of his point. What an insane bump to the guardrail by Misawa. Back of the head first. Jesus Christ. Do you want to say a little bit about that spot?
I don't know what to say about it. Like he's insane. He does a lot of insane things throughout his career. And this was, like, the first, I guess, real insane thing we saw. But, like, there's very few people that took bumps like that. Like, Dynamite Kid, him, maybe Chris Benoit. Like, there's very few people, like, Great Suzuki. But, like, there's very few people, especially guys that big, that are taking bumps like that.
He could have killed him. He could have killed himself. I mean, legitimately, if that...
we probably shouldn't talk about that.
No, but I'm just saying that was like... You want to talk about crazy bumps. Assisted chug slam by Jumbo and Tawe. I thought that was cool.
Yeah.
The finish to this match was really hot. You know, power bomb by Tawe, German by Kobashi, choke slam by Tawe, and then again, and two choke slams in a row. Wow. Tawe gets the pin. Or what a hot finish, and that is how you do near falls, modern WWE. That's what I've written here. That is a proper finishing sequence.
Yeah, that was really, really one of the few really hot ones. We've seen a lot of good finishing stretches, but I really, really enjoyed this one. I had this at 4.25. There was maybe a little. It started off really hot. There's a little dead parts in the middle. Not really dead, but like it slowed down a little, which, you know, it's fine. But then it really heated up near the end. So, yeah, I thought this was a great way for maybe not Jumbo's last great match, because we see him in a couple other good ones on this show. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. Really, really good. And the last one, I guess, before he starts to show signs.
Yeah. So, as you know, Steven, I don't give the 4.25 rating.
Yeah, of course.
But this is really hovering between 4 and 4.5. And if there was ever a match that may make me break it, it would be this one. You should. But I won't.
You won't.
Because it doesn't map onto my letter ratings, you know? So, 4 stars for me, but inclining upwards. I'll just put it that it's like at the top end of 4 stars, okay?
4 stars with an asterisk or something?
No, because that would make it 5 stars, Steven.
Oh, sorry.
Jesus Christ, what the fireworks? I legitimately...
There's
loads of them. I'm going to have to have a look. Hold on, I'm going to have to pause this and have a look what the hell's going on.
Oh, sorry, keep Steven. Recording. That's fine.
All right, hold on.
Oh, good. It's like sounds like it's Canada Day over there. Or some kind of war zone, maybe? No. We'll see.
My God. I don't know, but somebody's got a metric ton load of fireworks and they're just letting them all off in the street. So
people do that. We have a big parking lot outside of our apartment building that kind of like allows you to cut to the subway really quickly, and quite often there's people letting off fireworks there. Not this time of year because it's too damn cold, But like just random days.
They just like freeze before they even got going.
Well, you can't even light them because you can't set fire because it's too cold.
All right. Well, so we both agreed that was a good match and really hot finish. I really enjoyed that, the finish. Much, much better than any, you know, than your Taker versus HBK bullshit.
Well,
you know?
Well, maybe number WrestleMania 25. That was about the same level. But generally, I agree. Like, it blows away Triple H Undertaker. That's for sure.
I guess the point is that there's no sense in which you feel that they are conscious about this. It's just organic, you know.
Yeah, there is that like, feeling with any Shawn Michaels and The Undertaker and Triple H. There's that feeling that like they are kind of like showing you how to do a great match.
Yeah. I don't know. I shouldn't. I don't. You know. I will leave it to others to criticize the modern product. You know my feelings. okay. The next match then, it's July.
Yeah.
The 5th.
Uh-huh.
And July the 4th, the way this is going, bloody hell. July the 5th, 1992, Kobashi and Kikuchi taking on Masafuchi and Yoshinari Ogawa.
Ogawa?
Ogawa, yeah. Sorry, Ogawa, yeah, that's it.
So first, Fushi comes out to the Danger Zone song.
Yeah.
Which is amazing. I was so excited. And Ogawa, if you haven't seen him, like he'll show up a bunch more in like 99 because he like forms a tag team with Misawa and they have some good matches. But if you haven't watched All Japan and you haven't seen him before, he was actually in the 1996 Royal Rumble.
Was he?
Yeah.
What, did he wear a mask or did he just...
Oh, no, that was Amori. Sorry, that was Amori. I'm confusing him with Amori. I don't know who Ogawa is in. I'm really
confused. Was that the one Dory Funk Jr. was in? Or was that 95?
That was 95.
Which is one of the most random appearances in a Royal Rumble ever.
No, that's not Amori. That's Ogawa. I'm really confused myself. I'm going to have to double-check my information. So you start with your parts points, play the music, and by the time you've done that, I'll be...
Okay. Kobashi continues to impress with his fired up offense. He's been the standout performer so far tonight. I really like his bombs. I really like his stiff chops. I love his Lex Luger clothesline. Really cool. You know what I mean by that, right? He's just a very good offensive worker. He's pretty good selling too. I actually got excited watching this because if you remember last show, I couldn't actually see how Kobashi was going to start becoming this world class wrestler, but I don't know, something seemed to have happened around this point in his career because he's all of a sudden he's turned. I guess maybe he's allowed more time to show what he can do by the booking, Stephen.
I don't know. I thought he was. I thought the tag. We'll compare it to the other tag shortly because I want to do that. But just as an update, it was Amori in the Royal Rumble, so I was confused. Wanted to correct myself.
Well. It's good timing though, because my second PowerPoint is, and I'll just read it exactly as I've written it. This little dipshit Ogawa has looked good in this match. He's a good sprinty little worker, kind of a heel counterpart to Kikuchi.
Yeah,
so, you think that's a fair statement?
That's very fair. I actually really enjoyed the team of Fushi and Ogawa. I thought they were really this fun kind of juniors version of Tawei and Jumbo.
Yeah, well, I was actually thinking like a junior's version of Power and Glory or something like that. like the kind of big, you know, the power and the power and the finesse type thing or something like that.
Yeah, that's good. Yeah.
Did you have anything else to? I've got one more point, but did you have any other notes on this one?
I thought this match was really great. Like the near falls near the end. I thought the heel work was really, really good. And I thought it was. You know, not quite as good as the Kobashi Kikuchi match from the last show, but I thought it was pretty close. Like, I thought it was a damn really awesome match that really had me pumped up.
No, I'm with you. Kikuchi and Kobashi did some really cool state-of-the-art double-teaming here. And I just written, I bet this felt absolutely spectacular in 1992. Like, I can see Meltzer just going nuts for this. Especially as this is, like, around the time that the Steiners were around in WCW. And, it would, like, we all know that Meltzer was a Steiner mark. But, like, if he was popping for that stuff, I can imagine him really, like, we got, you know, a power slam on Ogawa from the top rope. I mean, that's an awesome spot. Scoop power slam from the top rope. We got a savat kick into a German. I mean, how awesome was that?
My favorite thing was Ogawa getting caught jumping from the top rope and it turning into a power slam by Kobashi. I thought that was awesome.
Yeah, scoop power slam from the top rope. That's what I just mentioned that.
Well, you explained it weird.
Oh, sorry. Yeah, no, I always call it scoop power slam. I really enjoyed Fuchi throwing around Kikuchi for fun. It was kind of like, because you know, I watched that Brock Cena versus that Brock Lesnar versus John Cena match. You know, the famous one.
From Extreme Rules.
From Extreme Rules. There was a little moment where I was like, this is Fuchi as Brock Lesnar. He picks up Kikuchi and throws him, like, body slams him about 2 feet away. Like he's the biggest badass in the world. I thought that was really funny.
Fuchi was just, like, really mean in this match, wasn't he?
He was like a bully. Just a mean, mean bully. So I did think this was kind of like an All Japan Juniors version of a Steiner Brothers match. And I'm one of the few people who likes the Steiners. I thought this was really cool, like 4.5 stars for me.
I had 4.5 as well. I really liked it.
No, really cool, like spot fest, basically, but like one with really fun spots. And I thought it was, you know, some good storytelling in there as well. But just like, let's watch the little guys be beaten up, basically. That was basically the.
Yeah. I think the next two matches are going to take us a little bit of time because we have the whole jumbo thing to talk about, right?
Yeah, we do.
Yeah, so I'm going to take time to plug my other show because I don't think I ever do it. Pro Wrestling Super Show, first, second, and third Wednesdays of every month. Really fun. I have a couple of guests on every week and we talk about different topics. So go check it out. It's on the same feed here. But the other thing I wanted to plug was, and this is something Chad wanted me to bring up to you because he's interested on your reaction. So on Place to Be Nation, what we're doing is me and I think about 6 other people, we're taking each WrestleMania and we're rebooking it with the same amount of matches, with the same roster and the same champions. However, we can't repeat any of the matches that are actually on the show.
Oh, that's very interesting idea. Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we're doing Monday through Friday every week. So, I think WrestleMania 5 was posted today because it's the 5th day. And there's a little poll at the end where you can vote. But what would you put for WrestleMania 3 main event?
I was just thinking WrestleMania 2, you could book some really weird matches like Dory Funk Jr. versus Mr. T. just ridiculous matches. WrestleMania 3 main event, did you say?
Yeah.
Hogan Piper.
Okay, that was seemed to be what most people did. I went with the little more classic hot feud of Hogan and Kamala. But I think that might be better than my WrestleMania 1 main event, which I had it all booked out and it was all good. And then I realized I had to put Mr. T wrestling because that was one of the rules of a celebrity wrestler. So the main event of WrestleMania 1 I had to go with ended up being Hulk Hogan and Mr. T versus Don Morocco and Mr. Fuji.
Oh, God, Jesus Christ. Well, you know.
That can't be worse than what we got. Like, it had to have been just as good. You had Fuji throwing the salt.
Was Piper actually on WrestleMania 3? What was his match that night?
WrestleMania 3, that was versus Adonis.
Adonis, right. Adonis. Yeah.
That was his retirement with the haircut that, you know, turned Brutus Beefcake from
One match they never did that they that could have been a hot feud was Hogan versus Jesse Ventura. Like, you just got one match out of Jesse Ventura. I know he couldn't work, but I think the promos would have been good.
Well, yeah, the promos. Aren't they? Maybe they were a little too similar.
Well, I mean, they could have been like, "I'm the true heir of Billy Graham."
Hogan would never admit to being a ripoff to Billy Graham.
But also, they legitimately hated each other. So it could have actually been quite a hot few. Maybe 84?
Maybe.
That's too early for WrestleMania, isn't it?
What if Hogan teamed with Gorilla versus Jesse and somebody, like Savage or something?
To do it a bit later, it could be Jesse and Vince.
Yeah, exactly.
Anyway, okay. Right, should we get to the next one? You've got any other plugs to make or anything?
No, I just wanted to bring up Mr. Fuji and Kamala in main events of WrestleMania too.
I'll plug my shows at the end because we might seem to need some time if I plug my
By the way, I was thinking, like, you have three shows. I only have two. Like, I was thinking, man, I probably need to add another show to keep up with Parv. And I realized I'd probably get divorced, and I don't want that. So we're sticking with the two.
Hey, well, you know, I only had one show when I let's not get into that. Okay, so it's Kobashi and Kikuchi. No, we've done
we
that.
We just did that. Oh, it's Misawa, Kawada, Kikuchi versus Jumbo, Taue, and Ogawa from August 20th of 1992.
Okay, I'm blaming the iPad because it keeps on going off and then it resets where I am on the note.
Oh, so that's frustrating.
I'll try to keep it on. So first of all, did you get the dude with the headband?
Outside with holding a tray of something?
He looked like he was like selling nuts or something. But he's also like presenting the show. It's kind of like
weird. He like went over house show footage or like clips of like results or something.
So yeah, I mean, I would like to think that you know the mad announcer, whose name escapes me right now. I would like to think that is him.
Oh,
that he looks like that. You know, that he commentates on all the matches with a headband on.
He probably does.
Okay, so we have to get into this now. First of all, I had written, "What is this haircut, Jumbo?" And then I kind of got a good look at him, and he didn't look entirely well, which made me sad, Stephen.
Yes.
And I'm guessing this is when, either around the time or coming up to the time where Jumbo was diagnosed.
Yeah, he had taken July off that tour. He came back and he did this tour and the next tour, and then that was it for him. Before, you know, he did the treatment and then came back and did comedy matches in the undercard. So I'm not sure if he was completely diagnosed at this point, but he was not feeling well. That's for sure.
What was the actual illness again?
It was hepatitis B.
Oh, dear.
Believe.
The wrestler's disease. Yes. Sad, basically. You know, he's one of the, like, even if you're not going to put him number one, definitely one of the all-time, one of the, you know, top five all-time great wrestlers. So it was sad to see this.
He's friggin' awesome.
Just as I wrote that, well, my first pass, yeah, but the first pass point.
Parv's Pick.
Jumbo kicking Kikuchi in the head is beautiful. Basically,
I put a death big boot as
yeah,
my first
death
comment.
Big boot into Kikuchi's little head. I mean, if you know, I've just written here, I mainly want wrestling to be just Jumbo kicking the shit out of Kikuchi. I could watch that all day.
I wrote a bunch of things about how much I was loving Jumbo versus Kikuchi, how much I want to see a singles match between the two, how awesome these two work together as Jumbo just beating the shit out of him. Yeah.
At one point, Jumbo threw Kikuchi, I'm not kidding you, about 6 feet across the ring. He just picked him up and threw him across the ring. It was just like, that may be the biggest body slam of all time. Like power slam or whatever, standing power slam, I don't know what you'd call it.
Yeah.
Just like dumped him.
And then late in the match, the lariat and the massive, massive death back suplex for the finish. I mean, he just absolutely destroyed Kikuchi in this match, which is what you'd want, right? That's what how you would want that to go, that encounter.
That's all I wanted. It seemed like Jumbo was staying out of this one a lot, though, right? You had that feeling?
I did, yeah. He was kind of on the apron, and he was letting the other guys take more of the match. And I actually felt, I mean, on all of this footage, Taue is really the guy who is stepping into the breach in Jumbo's place in a lot of those matches. I do have a quite a substantial second pass point here, Steve, and it's less about the match and more about Misawa. I've come to think, because watching this match, Misawa kind of started to remind me a little bit of Ric Flair as a face. Now, this may seem like a weird analogy.
Are we getting the three faces of Misawa?
Not really. Well, I mean, just the one of Flair's four faces, I guess.
Okay.
So just to be clear, I mean, one of Flair's kind of characters that he has in that kind of complex, behind that complex visage, is Flair like the athlete, like the college boy, you know, somebody who always gives 100%, someone who will stop at nothing to be the best, you know, he's kind of like, you know, the grade A student type thing. And to me, Misawa comes across like that, you know, he's do you know what I mean? Like he comes across as being just that, like true blue kind of. I'm talking about basically like Starrcade '83 Ric Flair, not Slick Rick, but kind of the version of him that you get in those promos, back and forth with Harley Race, you know, Flair during that time. That's how he comes across. He also has kind of like a similar build to Flair, in that he's not like the biggest or the strongest or the most technically gifted or the most high flying, but he's just like the best, you know. He's just, you know, there may be other guys who beat him in any one of those other categories, but only Misawa kind of puts it all together. And that's a comparison point that I may come back to as we see Misawa develop here, because it was just something that occurred to me as we as I was watching the way he was working during this match. And also the selling, Stephen, that we talked about. Obviously, like, Flair's a bump machine and Misawa is also a bump machine, not afraid to get his ass kicked, basically.
He was really good in this one, as always, really, to be fair. The other thing I want to bring up in this match, it seemed to be a lot of it was focused on Kikuchi versus Ogawa, which I was digging. They're like the Patriot and the Dark Patriot. Like they seem like the yin and yang, like you pointed out earlier. So it was really fun seeing them go at it again. Hopefully, I don't think we get to see much more of them against each other. But I might have to seek it out on my own, because it was real fun.
I'd like to see a singles match between them.
Yeah, you know, for sure.
Probably stick those two guys on a random late '90s WCW card. They'd probably have the match of the night.
Yeah,
I imagine.
Well, depends which late 90s.
Depends which one. Yeah, you know, don't put them up against Eddie and Ray. Just put them up against another one, and you know, probably put them up against Dean and Eddie, maybe.
Yeah,
sorry.
Probably. No, it's...
sorry, I'm extra specially smarky tonight, aren't I?
I can't tell the difference.
The third pass point, we got another assisted chokeslam. And on the pin attempt, Kikuchi came over, and his little punches on Taue to break the pin attempt were truly pathetic. I thought that was really funny. They were just kind of... Did you notice that?
When
he kind of like... It was just like he was almost like an ant or something. But anyway, I thought... I really enjoyed this. I thought it was really good. I gave it 4.
I had the dreaded 4.25 again. So I'm killing you with the ratings today.
Well, I reckon over the all of the shows, the fact I don't give that quarter rating will probably mean you end up higher. Lots of
That's probably, that'll be the deal breaker right there.
Yeah. Okay. But yeah, really good match, and it was weird because like this suite of matches that we were watching tonight aren't like the most pimp matches in the world.
Yeah.
So they're all kind of a little bit under the radar, but I thought, you know, really good.
Yeah. So like that, especially that tag match, I thought that was almost as good as we've seen. That was really good. Yeah. But we still have another match, so let's not.
Yes. So. October the 7th, 1992, Jumbo and Tawe taking on Dr. Death, Steve Williams, and Terry Gordy. Now, this has got to be towards the end for Jumbo, hasn't it?
Yeah, this is the last match we'll see, and probably his last like big time match. I'm not entirely sure if he has other matches after this, but this is the last one that gets hyped in any way, so.
Deeply upsetting, Stephen. What are we going to do? We're going to do a memorial service or something? Yeah, like, I don't know. How is this show going to continue without the great Jumbo on it? I guess it was always going to come, right?
Yeah, it's the future was always, or the past was always set in stone, so.
Oh, dear. But I have a much more trivial note to start with here. Why is there a woman on commentary?
I thought like I accidentally had started playing two videos because it seemed like there was too many people talking at once for the first little bit.
Like I can't speak any Japanese, but I can tell you that woman was not on the same page with the rest of the. She was like so many guest female commentators we've seen over the years, just not at the races at all. I mean, I don't know. Maybe do you think she was like a Japanese celebrity or something?
Maybe they would do that. I like the what was the female celebrity that did announcing for the Houston shows in the WWF? She was fine.
What? Mike McGurk.
Yeah, she was fine, and Renee Young's pretty good. So don't be all sexist. So, but I'm not even sure if it was her off the page or if it was someone else off the page. But something was off. I'm not gonna blame her.
I'm not a vegetarian, neither am I a feminist, even. Only messing about. Okay. I don't know. I'm trying to think of the... There's been some amazing ones over the years in Crockett. What was her name? Linda Curry or whatever it was.
Fuck. Okay. Elizabeth did announcing for ICW.
Who's the one on WrestleMania 2?
Oh, God. She's the worst.
Christ. Did you have her in a match? You should have had it. You should have put Mr. T versus her.
Shut up.
Have it beaten up, you know.
That would have been awesome.
Okay. But that was point one then. It occurred to me watching this match that Terry Gordy is made almost entirely of potato.
Oh, I dropped the mic on my leg. I fell back laughing. Oh, that hurt. Okay.
His body is one big potato. His two hands are potatoes. His head is a potato, which has started sprouting hair. He's a very strange man. Very cool. Like he's.
I don't know. He gives potatoes out. I know that.
Yeah, he punches like his hand's a potato, so... Anyway, let me get into my first substantial point, then. You can eat potatoes, right?
I eat potatoes. What the hell?
Okay, so this was essentially work with a classic Southern tag structure, with Tawe as our face in peril. They actually worked double heat, with Tawe being the face in peril both times, which you don't see... that often, and you can tell how Jumbo is kind of being protected and asked to do less here, because you know, the double heat, Tawe face in peril both times, that basically means that Jumbo is standing on the apron for the vast majority of the match. But man, what a performance from Tawe here. I said that Misawa's like the kid who's like the straight A student, probably like the captain of the football team, you know, like probably on like a straight on for a scholarship or something, and like, you know, like the, like Misawa's your golden boy, but Tawa is like that kid who might not be the best or the brightest, but he'll always have like an A star for effort, right?
Oh yeah.
And wow, he really put in a shift here tonight. At one point, he does a plancha to the outside, which is absolutely mental. Given that I mean, what does Tawa weigh, do you reckon? 260?
At least. I was thinking 270, 280.
I mean, he's not a small guy to be doing that spot. I mean, that's just... I mean, he just launches himself through the ropes. Doc and Gordy were fine, by the way. Anything to... I thought, like, this was, you know, Tawa was MVP of this match, without doubt.
Yeah. I'm a big Tawa fan, so I'm going to be a little biased towards him anyways. Williams and Gordy definitely held their own. I think it, you know, it built up slowly into like kind of like a heavyweight bomb throwing spot fest, which I'm sure I thought that would be right up your alley. So I thought you'd be praising this really high.
Yeah, no, I love their offer. In fact, I was wondering why they couldn't have worked more like this in WCW. Because, you know, when they were working for Watts down there, it was all like chin locks and boring, you know. Like, this is what Doc and Gordy should be doing, throwing bombs.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I really like that. I mean, I do have a third quite long point as well.
Okay.
I want to talk about Barbara's booking here, which is something we haven't really discussed a lot. And I thought that this was a match where you can really see the benefits of his, how can I call it, like his kind of rigid, his rigid hierarchical way of booking, I guess.
Yeah, that's good description. I like that.
Now, like some people could say, well, you know, it's very kind of like slow development and, you know, a lot of samey cards and things like this. But, you know, it does a number of things. Like, first of all, it makes the near falls really count. You know, they really count. You genuinely don't know what is going to be the pinfall on any of these matches, really. But there are two other important things here with this match. First of all, I thought this was really obvious that Tawa is being pushed in a pretty major way here. I mean, he's stepping up as a major player. From the time that me and you have been watching these matches, Stephen, you know, first he got the pin in that, you know, that other tag match. Now this is another match where he's getting a pin, you know, against major opponents, you know, as Jumbo is getting beaten down. So there's just a really clear signal that Tawa is a man to watch in this promotion now. And I just think that's, you know, so well booked and well signaled, but it's only possible because the norm is so well established. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So any change from that norm is like, oh, you know, we're really going to notice this now.
Yeah. This is a big deal because it's not what we get every week type of deal.
Yeah, it's not what we see. Like, you know, how many matches have we seen where Tawa has either eaten the pin or Jumbo has been the man to get the pin, you know? And now Tawa, and the other thing is, man, did they get that choke slam over as a finisher during, you know, these few months in 1992. Like, they really got it over. And I just think, you know, and I bet you Doc and Gordy don't job too often either, you know? So
No.
It's kind of like, wow. So he's pinning, was it Gordy who ate the pin here?
I can't recall.
I think it's Gordy. I mean, you know, it's just a major, major deal. And it's like, okay. So we know, I mean, if you just think behind the scenes, you know Jumbo, I mean, I don't know if they knew that Jumbo was, you know, going to have to take time off after this or that he wasn't going to come back, but at least he's put himself in a position where Jumbo could feasibly go away and there's a man right there to take the same spot type thing, you know? I mean, I'm obviously not saying that this is enough to build Tawa to the star of Jumbo's level, but at least it's kind of, you know, it's, I don't know, Bret Hart in 1991 over Perfect or something like that, you know?
Yeah. To go along with, Misawa during this period wins the Triple Crown for the first time, over Stan Hansen. So he's being built. He's finally, you know, at the top. He's kind of taken Jumbo's spot finally, as Jumbo's leaving here. So, and, you know, Kobashi's looking like the king of the undercard, leading all these tags. And you have Kawada. I guess we didn't see much of him here, but he's another guy near the top. So they've done a good job of taking these three or four undercard guys and pushing them to the top.
It's just like an ABC of how to build a star. And I mean, but Barber, to his credit, he did it with Tenryu. He did it with Jumbo, who took over from himself, obviously, as the ace in that promotion. And now he's doing it with all of these guys at once, which is, I think, really, really good. I mean, it's something that, I don't know, Eric Bischoff didn't manage it. in all seriousness, like...
Well, Vince McMahon's been trying for a few years now to do something, but he's not had any success, so...
Yes, absolutely. Like, and this is, you know, it's just patience, time. Like, I mean, I don't know, that's George Harrison, isn't it? Got to have patience and time.
but patience is really the key word that a lot of bookers don't have.
Yeah, that's entirely it. Know when the right time. And I mean, Barber, what with guys like. You know, Kobashi and Kawada. I mean, it's been years, you know.
Yeah.
By this point, what, 3-4 years? 5 years, even? Yeah, I really enjoyed this. I gave it 4.5. I'm probably going to be the highest vote on this match, I'd imagine, because I really enjoyed it. And a nice way for... I mean, obviously, it would have been really fairy tale if Jumbo would... you know, got the pin on his way out, but I actually think it's even better in a way that he went out while doing a service to the company by letting his partner have the heat, his partner have the, you know, the rub from the pin. I just thought that was really good. So,
yeah, I wonder, maybe we need to watch this for the next show or something, but find Jumbo's kind of last match before he goes out that's on tape and see what kind of happens there. Maybe we got to search that out.
Yeah, and also I never want to watch his comedy matches. That's just something I mean, have you ever seen any of them?
No.
It's just something I don't want to do. You know, I just don't want to, like, you know.
Yeah.
Just like I never want to see, you know, Ric Flair in TNA or whatever. You know?
It's fair enough.
Okay, so we do have a little Easter egg, don't we, Stephen?
Yeah, well, do you want to do that after the awards and talking about next week, or do you want to hit that up now?
No, let's do it now to get it out of the way.
Okay.
Do you want to introduce it?
Sure. Chad wanted to see my list of all the shows that we're doing and kind of our schedule it set out, and he did, and he decided that... this match here is something that we should watch for historical significance. So it's Misawa and Stan Hansen from August 22nd of 1992 for the Triple Crown. So we ended up watching this. What did you think, Barb?
We delayed starting our recording for half an hour for this match, which, you know, gave you time to walk your dog at least. Yeah, I mean, I understand the historical significance of Misawa winning the Triple Crown. But essentially, they worked this match as if they were Jack Briscoe and Dory Funk Jr. in 1972 for the first 20 minutes, which I don't understand at all. It's Stan Hansen and Misawa. So why isn't Stan Hansen just kicking the shit out of Misawa? I don't understand why they worked it in this way. Yeah, really boring, basically. And I don't know what else to say, because it's not like... I mean, that's probably doing a disservice to Jack and Dory, to be honest, because, you know, those guys knew how to work holds and make them interesting and, you know, do neat little counters and transitions and fly mat work and stuff. This was literally just laying in a hold. Not very interesting. And really disappointing considering who's involved. I will say the finishing stretch, last 5-6 minutes, were pretty exciting. A finishing stretch does not a half hour match make. One of the more disappointing, I mean, in terms of disappointment, I put it up there with, well, for me, I know this is going to be controversial. Greg Valentine versus Bob Backlund, which I thought is a crushingly dull match, because again they're just sitting in a headlock for the first 20 minutes, you know, and not doing anything at all to make it make it interesting. So yeah, I don't know. I mean, this is off the books, by the way. No Paths points, no music, not in the record books, not in the record books. But I don't know, like 2.5 stars, something like that.
Yeah, I don't know how to do star ratings under 3.5 stars, so I'm not entirely sure what to get it. Yeah, it was boring. And for being Stan Hansen, it's not what you want. I think if this was two other guys doing the same match, I wouldn't have as much of a problem with it. So it's kind of like expectations that kind of ruin it. But like the shoulder work was all right. It was neat, you know. I think, was Misawa injured for this? Like with a shoulder injury or something? Or is it like a long storyline with his shoulder or something? Because Hansen... was not wrestling a regular Hansen match. He was wrestling your shoulder's hurt, I'm going to methodically pick it apart.
Yeah, he did target that shoulder a lot. But like, I don't know, like, okay, imagine it was Arn or Ole Anderson or something, same match. Okay, I think they would have found ways to make that focus on the shoulder interesting. It's not the style of the match that I have, you know. I like focused mat work. I like, you know, I like a methodical game plan. It was just the way they worked it wasn't engaging.
Yeah.
And it's surprising because, you know, Hansen can do those sorts of matches.
Yeah.
And he can do them well. He's got matches against Inoki that I've seen, for example, where there are stretches where he does that sort of thing. You know, and I hate Inoki, and I even made those matches interesting. So it's not like a Stan Hansen can't work this style of match either thing.
No, there was I don't know if they were like felt under a lot of pressure to put out a classic because it was like the changing of the guard of the title or something like that, but there was something wrong with this. It was all right. Like I didn't hate it. But it wasn't great or anything.
The match I would have preferred to see tonight would be Hansen versus Kikuchi.
Fuck, yes, I would have liked to see that. That's for sure.
That'd be good. I'd also like to see Brock Lesnar versus Kikuchi. That would be a lot of fun. I'd like to see
Vader.
2002-2003 Kurt Angle versus Kikuchi.
1992 Vader would be good.
Vader versus Kikuchi. Fucking, you know, Benoit versus Kikuchi, you know, anyone who had like super high, or the Steiner brothers in a 2-on-1 handicap match versus Kikuchi.
Goldberg versus Kikuchi, I think, is now my new dream match.
Maybe if you're listening to this, you can write in and tell us your dream versus Kikuchi match. Who would you like to see kick the shit out of him?
My vote's Goldberg. I think that would be the best.
Goldberg. All right. okay. So should we do the awards then?
Yeah, let's do it.
Well, what are the awards? Remind me.
Well, I like MVP of the show and match of the night. And then you like some worse stuff that I don't really like.
Oh, well, I always think it's worth it for the sake of scrutiny, you know.
Sure.
Okay, so let's do MVP then. Who's the MVP? I think there's an easy MVP for me for tonight.
I think it probably should be Tawe. He did so great, but it's Jumbo's last show. You know, I feel bad not giving it to Jumbo. So,
well, you know, I love Jumbo more than most people, I reckon, and there's no room for sentimentality here.
Oh, okay.
It's not like, you know, giving the Oscar to Sidney Poitier because he didn't win it when he should have, you know. Let's not, none of this. It's okay. Tawe. It's Tawe. Come on.
Tawe, Ogawa, I think, would be second if I had a second pick. I thought he was friggin' great.
So. I'd go Tawe, Kobashi. I thought Kobashi was really good in what he did tonight. And especially that little sequence where in the first match that we watched, where, you know, he just pulled out, you know, 7 or 8 just massive spots all in a row.
Yeah.
That's a lot of fun.
Yeah.
So, you know, our power slam off the top rope, was it him who did that?
Yeah, that was Kobashi.
Yeah, amazing. So, yes, I can see him growing on me if he keeps on working like that. So, but yeah, Tawe, this was like a coming of age show for him. It felt like to me, like there was a show a while back we did where it felt like Kawada's coming out party.
Yeah, this is Tawe's for sure.
This is kind of Tawe's coming out party, and
it was like a side Tawe side Kobashi coming out party.
Yeah, like a joint coming out party, I guess. Maybe ready for them to start, you know, their epic in encounters, as it were. They're gearing up now, aren't they?
Yes, they are.
We just need Kawada and Tawe to meet each other. And stop hating each other.
Yeah. Do you want me
I would like to know how they stop hating each other. Yeah.
Yeah. As far as I know, they have a match, and then like they're teaming after that. So I don't know what the hell happens in that match. I haven't watched it in years or remember or anything. But like, my brain has always kind of made up they had a match. It was epic. They won each other's respect. They both needed partners, and it was off to the races. But maybe we'll explore that in a couple shows when that goes down.
Okay. So the match of the night, did I have three matches? I had two matches at 4.5.
Yeah.
And 2 at 4. So very high quality. 4 really good matches tonight that we watched. So I think the opener that we watched, the match with Misawa Kobashi versus Jumbo.
I thought you only had that at 4 stars.
Oh yeah, shit, I did. Hold on. No, sorry. The Kikuchi Kobashi Fuchi Ogawa spot fest.
Yeah, yeah.
Bomb throwing. That was so much fun.
Yeah, that's mine too. I'm like, last month we had the Kobashi Kikuchi match that I think we both had at 4.75, and this one we both had at 4.5. And what a hell of a tag team Kobashi and Kikuchi is.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's what you want, really. You've got Kikuchi to take the beating, and Kobashi to get the hot tag and throw the bombs, and you know. But also like some great heel performances from Fuchi and you know, the Bizarro World Kikuchi there. So yeah, that's match of the night. But I really like that last tag match as well. What did you have that one at, Steven?
The last tag match, I had 4 stars.
You had 4. Okay, so I was quite a bit higher than you on that one. Yeah, but that was more of kind of like, I guess it's getting like 0.5 star for what it's doing booking wise, and you know, Tawe and all the rest of it.
I have no room for sentimentality on my star ratings.
I do privilege context sometimes. Like, for example, yeah. I don't know, Flair versus Sting, which is a match I don't like that much. Clash 1. I think that gains a star for most people just because of what it does for Sting's career type
not
thing.
For me. That's matches.
Not for me. I don't like it either.
I think a match that you're missing the context for and thus underrating, you recently watched, was the Punk Cena match from Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
I think you're missing something there.
Well, I am aware of the context because I watched all the stuff around that. I just didn't watch the match. Because I would remember, you know, I'm part of an online wrestling community. I must have been
What community?
Pro wrestling only, Steven. Oh, yeah. And I was, and obviously the internet blew up when that happened, that promo and stuff. So obviously I remember the context around. I just don't think it's a very good match. You know, it's not. Go back. Have you watched it recently?
Yeah, I watched it for the Epic Roundtables we were talking about.
I think you need to just go back and watch it in a vacuum or something, and try to assess it as a wrestling match, and you'll see it's basically just any WWE main event. That's all it is, that match.
I completely disagree. But okay. Let's get your stupid worst awards out of the way. What worst thing do you want to do?
It's difficult to give worse work on these shows, isn't it?
It very much is.
Well, I mean, originally we were doing the rankings. These are kind of where the big boy play style awards. These are.
Well, the rankings I think we're saving for every couple of years.
Yeah. Misawa, I guess. It's fucking ridiculous.
I guess.
I mean, I guess if Misawa's the worst worker on your show, I'm that's something.
Maybe Jumbo. Because he wasn't doing much at the end.
No, he was still cool. He was still sick in everything he did. Come on, it's Jumbo.
I would give one of the Gordy or Williams. I don't know which one.
I will say, so I am someone who's generally been quite down on Dr. Death. I like Gordy a bit more. You know, I like the Freebird and so on. Dr. Death, I think, actively sucks in the NWA in his late 80s run. Just don't like anything that he did there. And there is, like, I don't like little things about the way Williams, like, I don't like, for example, it's going to sound so tiny and petty, Steven, but I don't like his execution of a power slam, for example.
Doesn't nail it.
Which is a shame, because obviously he was a protege of, Darling Ted.
So, yes.
From his Mid-South days, but clearly didn't learn how to do a power slam, did he? Because he just doesn't, he's almost like a kind of, this is going to sound ridiculous, but he's almost like kind of Jim Duggan with a pair of working boots on or something. Like,
yeah, but I like Jim Duggan, so.
There's something of Duggan about Williams.
And, yeah, for sure.
And, you know, like, okay. Duggan's got some good matches, you know. There's one against Vader, I think, 94.
Yeah.
That's one I'd point to for Duggan. He obviously against
DiBiase. Your Darling Ted matches.
Yeah, yeah. Obviously in Mid-South. But, I mean, there is a limit to how good Duggan is, right, realistically. And I think, like, Williams is basically, like, Duggan on a really, really good day most of the time. So,
well, Dr. Death's best stuff is his All Japan run. So
we're gonna see. I mean, this is one of his better performances I've seen of him, and he wasn't that brilliant here. I thought Gordy was better in this match than he was. Would you agree with that?
I guess. I don't know. It was close.
Yeah, but I was kind of. I mean, to be honest, I was mainly concentrating on the phenomenal performance that Tawi was giving us in that match. So
yeah,
it was kind of like, you know, they were just there to do the moves type thing. Fine. I did like the escape on the what's that move they do? The battering ram? Not the battering ram.
No, that's the bushwhackers.
That's a bushwhacker.
I don't know what they call it. But
Stampede.
The Oklahoma Stampede.
Oklahoma, yeah. I like the escape from that, for example. And, you know, it was good. Good. Yeah. So that's a very, you know, everybody was good, though. Even Doc was good. So.
I find it really. Maybe the guy outside selling peanuts. Maybe he was the worst.
Oh, the woman on commentary. So yeah. All right. So what are we doing next time?
Okay, and this is a big show. I think this is our first Jumbo List show. And we're getting more stuff that you kind of think about for All Japan. So we have. Misawa versus Kawada from October 21st, 1992. We have Misawa and Kawada versus Kobashi and Giant Baba for the first time.
Okay.
So from November 27th. And then we're heading into 1993. For January 30th, it's Misawa, Kawada versus Doc and Gordy. And then our final match is from February 28th, Hansen versus Kawada from 93.
That could be good.
Yeah.
That sounds interesting.
Yeah.
I can see that one being good. Okay.
Yeah, so that looks like a really good show.
Yeah, that's quite the maybe we should do away with the worst award for these shows, Stephen, because I'll tell you why, because we are literally picking out some of the best matches of all time. So it's a bit churlish to then say, "Oh, you know, Steve Williams didn't throw a very good power slam or whatever."
I agree. I think the worst awards are bunk. I think we'll make this promise to the listeners that me and Parv will go to the drawing board, and when we come back on the next episode, we'll have clear set awards laid out, because I think we've changed it every show.
All new awards for this show. Well, I mean, you can't. I mean, when you're those are the awards we do for the where the big boys play, and when you've got fucking cards with, you know, PN News on them, or you know, what's his name, you know, Ranger Ross, or
yeah,
Billy Graham. You know, it's called the Billy Graham Award.
Yeah,
it gives a something else to look for in all that complete shit that we're watching. Yeah. But there's essentially no, you know, it's all killer, no filler here.
Yeah, our ECW show, we do Match of the Night, MVP of the Night, and we also do Spot of the Night. So maybe
Spot of the Night would be good. Let's do Spot of the Night now, because I think there are lots of contenders.
Yeah.
There's the Misawa ridiculous bump.
Yes.
There's the power slam from the top rope.
Yeah, that's up there.
There is the decapitation of Kikuchi via Jumbo's boot.
Yeah, that's good. You got Misawa going in the guardrail. I think you mentioned that. Let's see.
What about one of many assisted choke slam spots that they did, or choke slams that Tawai did?
Yeah, that's really good. I like the Kikuchi doing the sequence where Kobashi does those rolling cradles like Terry Funk used to do. He does one on one on one of them and they kick out, and he does it on the other one and they kick out. I thought that was really cool too.
It was cool. I liked Savak kick into a German. That was fucking cool.
Yeah. But I think I'm gonna
DDT from the top rope. Jesus Christ,
that was crazy too. I'm going to go with the Death Big Boot by Jumbo on Kikuchi, just as one last Jumbo sentimental pick.
I think I'm going to go with I'm going to go with the kick into the German. That just looked so cool. And in fact, we mentioned Power and Glory earlier tonight.
Yeah.
They have got one of the best finishers ever.
They certainly do.
I love finishers that have like two movements like that. Always looks so cool to me. Also love the slingshot suplex, Stephen, because it's got like two movements, you know.
Interesting.
So yeah. Yes, lots of good spots. I like that spot of the night. That's something to look out for as well. So great. Plugging. Listen to. I tell you what. Go over to the place to be. What's it called? The feed.
The PWO-PTPN Podcast Network.
Yeah, go to that feed and you'll find all my shows there.
And all mine shows.
The ones you'll really want to listen to are Where the Big Boys Play, which is us going through WCW pay-per-views on a monthly basis. But let's be honest, why am I telling you this? Anybody listening to this show has already listened to my other shows. I mean, do you think that's a fair assumption? Is there anybody listening to this who isn't aware of the other shows I do?
I think they might be aware, but I don't know if they listen. Like, I think there's a few people listening to this show because they want to get into All Japan and they haven't like sat back and watched all the All Japan of the 90s, so they want to follow along. So some of those people might not be so interested in a top six best wrestling attire episode that I do, or you talking about, you know, the Great American Bash 1991 or something like that. So there's a possibility.
It's possible, but I think unlikely. But okay, fine. For you people, you know, Where the Big Boy Play is a WCW show, and Titans of Wrestling is a kind of how can you say, it's more of a kind of like a late night show, if that makes any sense. It's kind of so Where the Big Boys Play, I would say, is traditionally being quite analytical, and we look at kind of the Meltzers, we go behind the scenes. It's kind of quite a kind of smart quote unquote show. Whereas Titans of Wrestling is more, I don't know. You listen to both of them, Steve, and how would you say late night? Would you think that's,
yeah, it's more, it's less critical outside of really Pete, and it's there's a lot more fun and jokes. But I don't know where you put this show on that spectrum then.
I don't, like, the way I'd put it is that, like, if you can imagine me, like, presenting where the big boys play, I'd be wearing my tuxedo and I'd be well-dressed and so on.
Okay.
And Titans of Wrestling, I'd have unbuttoned my top shirt and I'd have, the, like, the tie undone.
Okay.
The tie. Can you picture that?
Yeah. And what are you wearing for this episode?
For this, I'm wearing a headband across my head.
Yes.
And I've got a little board here where I'm selling various peanuts and things.
That's excellent. I like it.
But yeah, on Titans of Wrestling, we look at the pre-Hogan era, WWF, really, as a really, really slept-on promotion and time. But we also take regular excursions and look at the 70s, really, all over the different territories. We're currently looking at Mid-Atlantic in the 70s, which is a really interesting... Yeah, there's more of a kind of historical bent to Titans of Wrestling. It's really a kind of late 70s, early 80s focus of a show. You know, and it's got Johnny Sorrow on there, who's funny, and Kelly, who's very informative, and Pete, who is, like you said, Stephen, a bit more kind of critical. And, you know, I just basically sit there and say, what do you think? And let's move on.
So point out somebody in the crowd. And
yeah, we look at various, you know, fat men in the crowd and things. Okay, that's it. I don't do plugs very often. Look out for the next one in All Japan Excite Series 19. But was it All Japan 6 next time, right?
Yeah, that sounds right. I closed my sheet, so I don't know.
Join us again. I'm really looking forward to that next week of matches.
Yeah, they look good. I'm very excited. More Kawada.